Tennis Direct are Australia's favourite online tennis store with fast delivery and great prices. Free delivery on orders over $150. Just visit their website, tennisdirect.com.au, and you can get a 10% discount store-wide. Just use the promo code FIRSTSERVE10. That's FIRSTSERVE10.
GLG Green Life Group, celebrating 25 years. Your open space specialists at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Evening, everybody. Welcome along to The First Serve. Magnificent to have you back. Brett Phillips with you. Your show, your thoughts tonight. Anytime, right throughout the next hour, 1300 736 736 or on the text 0433 98 1116. We'd love your contribution. As always, you can direct the tennis conversation wherever you like. The floor is yours if you'd like to call in tonight. In fact, I've got a couple of 18 holes of golf for two. That's quite timely with the golf back today and plenty of tennis folk love a round of golf. A complimentary drink to give away. Thanks to Club Mandalay, a must-play course in Melbourne's north. Also the $50 Rapid Tune voucher. They'll keep you moving with their huge range of services. You can book online at rapidtune.com.au. Your thoughts, 1300 736 736. The invitation is there for you. Domestically, abroad, there's never a shortage of news in the world of tennis. Well, as you're aware, we broadcast here in Melbourne, and yesterday's announcement that tennis could resume certainly brought plenty of smiles for clubs and coaching businesses that have had the gates locked for some time. In my travels to the SEN studios, and I did notice a few clubs open. What does all that mean? We're about to talk to the CEO of Tennis Victoria, Ruth Holdaway, in just a moment. We'll also get a couple of coaches' perspectives out there in clubland who have just loved hearing the beautiful Wilson or the Babolat, whatever ball, just come crisply off the strings today. But Ruth Holdaway is with us right off the top of the show, the CEO of Tennis Victoria. Ruth, nice to speak to you in sort of positive circumstances with tennis allowed back.
Yes, it's been fantastic news and I'm in much better spirits than the last time I spoke to you, that's for sure.
No doubt. I just wanted to, I suppose, clear up for those out in club land today. There's a lot of clubs, there's a lot of coaching businesses who obviously have been affected through COVID here in Melbourne. What does it all mean? I mean, some have gone back today, some are still waiting, depending if you're sort of linked through, council and sport and rec. In fact, Ruth, I had one just on our socials come through in the last half hour. Can you try and find out why there is a bit of confusion about what is and isn't allowed, the process of opening courts up and who decides what, despite successful opening and running of tennis during stage three. There seems to be a lack of clarity as to whether we use the rules we used back then, and if not, what has changed. Can you just sort of paint the picture tonight? I mean, tennis is allowed back, but can you maybe take us into some of the intricacies of that?
Yeah, sure. And look, that's a great question that somebody has posed. So let me start by saying it is really good news. It's good news for everybody that loves tennis, but particularly, of course, for tennis coaches who I know have had the toughest time of all through this period. So I'm really delighted that we can get coaching businesses back up and running in the city. That's fantastic. So as always with COVID restrictions, things are moving step by step, I guess is the best way to describe it. So we are able to restart tennis. We're a non-contact sport. But I think the government is looking for us to go back in a sort of slow and steady way and kind of test the waters rather than all out, just open the gates and let everybody back on the court. So I think the person that was asking the question was asking, you know, it seems a bit complicated, who makes decisions, where, and the truth is it is quite complicated. There are several layers of government that we have to go through. So essentially the Premier will make an announcement, yep. There'll be a statement that sort of summarises that, but the key thing then is the legal directions that tell us within the law what we can and can't do. So we get those, we've now got those came out today, and we then have to interpret those for each individual sport. So, you know, the way in which golf might interpret something because of the nature of their sport, the size of a golf course, all that kind of thing, might be a little bit different to tennis. And we work with the Department of Sport and Recreation to just clarify all these little details. And actually, our volunteers and our coaches are really helpful because they'll ask lots of questions, and that then helps us understand what are the intricacies that they need to know. But look, very briefly, I suppose, as an overview, and I can assure all of our clubs in Victoria that we'll be sending this information out to them first thing tomorrow morning. But briefly, what we do know is that we can open. We can open for singles or doubles, and you can have a maximum of 10 people within a facility. Now, that doesn't include the people that are required to run the facility or the coaches. So essentially, we're saying 10 patrons and then a minimum number of people required to kind of work and to allow that facility to be open safely. If you're in a really big facility and you can have a gap of 100 metres between your group of 10, you can actually have another group of 10, you know, across the facility on another bank of courts. But essentially, it's 10 people per facility, and you can play singles and doubles. And on each court, you can have people from no more than two households.
Okay.
So look, that's it in brief. There is a bit more detail behind it around things like clubhouses must be closed, but toilet facilities can be open. No equipment can be used or shared or hired out. You know, there's a number of kind of more detailed things that we need to go through, and we're providing all of that information to the clubs in Metro Melbourne tomorrow morning.
All that to be worked out. Ruth, I imagine, as I let you go, this must be the best news you've had in a long time, that tennis can get back.
Well, it certainly is, and I told my team today that we're now opening and we're staying open, so let's all follow the rules, you know, stick to the hygiene protocols, stay physically distanced, and hopefully that will mean this time we're open, we can stay open, and eventually we'll get our sport back to where it was before everything shut down.
Nice work. Thanks, Ruth. Ruth Holdaway, CEO of Tennis Victoria, just setting the scene tonight with tennis resuming. Mark Helawati's got a very impressive coaching resume. He's worked with the Williams sisters, Sam Stosur, you name it. He's coached over in China. He could write a book on that, and he's now at the beautiful Royal South Yarra Tennis Club, which is a beautiful setup. Mark, how good did that feel to be back on court today?
Oh, we're back, baby, we're back. It's so bloody good. There was, I almost lost my throat on day one, just through sheer enthusiasm and seeing people, and the young kids especially, like running to the courts to get on with their coaches. Just brought a massive bloody smile to my face, and I left the courts only half an hour ago, and the courts are booked out, and you just see people smiling and just really appreciating and grateful for the opportunity to get back out there and play a sport. As you said, like, it's non-contact, it's non-threatening, you know, it's a perfect sport in this situation, this pandemic, and you know, you can't underestimate the, you know, how tough it's been for a lot of people without this kind of exercise and kids being homeschooled and unable to do activities with their friends. And now finally, you know, the floodgates, you know, a controlled opening. But, man, I'll take it any day of the week right now.
Absolutely. And Royal South Yarra, Mark, is a fairly progressive club. I mean, you've done a lot during the COVID period just to sort of keep things up and running from a virtual sense, keep people engaged with the club. And a lot of clubs and, you know, committees have had to think about that sort of stuff while there's been such a, you know, a downturn in, you know, people coming through the gates.
Yeah, and I think from a coach's perspective, it's great that, you know, people are doing different things, and they're doing, you know, video skills for young kids, and a lot of Zoom meetings with multiple coaches talking about different subjects. So in a way, it's been a really good moment to not be so protective of our cattle as coaches can be sometimes, and just share the knowledge and share the experiences and start to talk and improve the level across the board for all coaches, you know, and upskill each other. So it's been, in a sense, you know, it's it's been really good that we're able to do that, and I think we've become quite appreciative of each other. And you know, no one knows everything, so we can always learn from everybody. And it's been great from that side of it for sure.
Absolutely, Mark. You do feature. We've only got a short amount of time here, but you do feature on our latest Aussies Only podcast. And it goes for a good hour, so there's a lot to pull apart from your great journey in tennis. For those that want to find the latest episode, just head to our website, thefirstserve.com.au, and you can listen to that podcast in your own time. And you've had a great time in tennis, so I urge people to go and have a listen to that, Mark. Really appreciate you coming on the show tonight.
Hey, thank you, and thanks for doing the great job for tennis all around the radio. And let's get out there, get a racket, get some balls, and geez, I encourage everyone to get out there and get on a court and start playing.
Good on you, Mark. A bit of pep in the step, Mark Hilawaddy, who I tell you what, he's one of the most up people I have ever met in tennis, as is Mark Sofoulis, who's on the other side of town. He's at the Melbourne International Tennis School, part of Maribyrnong College. Great setup out there. He runs a great business called The Tennis Menu, which partners us here on The First Serve. Mark, are you still out on court at the moment? Because you put in some hours.
Oh, I am out on court, BP. I'm just doing some serving with young Natasha on the court at the moment. And enjoying the nice fresh air for once.
Wow, that must be good, mate. I've been doing a bit of Zoom stuff with you. We've been doing podcasts right throughout the year, and you've been holed up in that beautiful office, I've got to say, but nice to get some fresh air.
It is, actually. I'm actually a little cold. I'm not used to the fresh air out here, so I'm used to the heater going on at some point in the evening. So, but it is nice to be back on court. It's actually been a long time coming.
So, obviously, as Ruth just sort of said off the top, I mean, there's certain protocols, and obviously this is sort of, stepping back into trying to have some sort of normality in a tennis club set up, which will come, in weeks and months' time, but nice to be able to come back in sort of some sort of fashion.
Yeah, it is. And it's obviously, being grateful for what we've got and what we don't have at the moment. I think that's the most important thing for us coaches. And, there's a lot of people that really rely, this is their livelihood. We coach for a living, and, we need to be able to put food on the table as well. And if any way that we can possibly get on the court, we'll do it. And there's a lot of protocols we've got in place, from sanitizer through to social distancing and not allowing too many people on court. Obviously, maximum 10 people in the venue. So really making sure we do that to make sure we can take a next step, hopefully in the next few weeks, to be able to then open up into, back to what we used to anyway.
Yeah, good man. Melbourne International Tennis School going beautifully. It's a good setup out there at Maribyrnong College. You're up early. What time tomorrow? Are we hitting the courts tomorrow?
Up at 6 a.m. we'll start tomorrow morning, and then a few hours in the morning, and then back in the afternoon and finish at about 8 o'clock at night. So it's generally a long day, but we'll take it at the moment after the sort of time period we've had off the court. So anything is a good time.
Good stuff. Mark Sofoulis with us. He's part of the Melbourne International Tennis School, also co-host of our Crunching the Numbers podcast that we do every week at the First Serve, giving us his take on life out in clubland. Well, you can be a winner here at the First Serve. Entries continue to pour in for our Wilson giveaway competition, all thanks to Tennis Direct, Australia's favourite online tennis store. Fast delivery, great prices, free delivery on orders over $150. So just go to their website, tennisdirect.com.au, and you can get a 10% discount store-wide. That's even a 10% discount on already items that are discounted. So just use the promo code FIRSTSERVE10. That's 10. We've got two of the Wilson RG Clash 100 G3 rackets and accessories to the value of $500. Two of the Wilson RG Blade 98 rackets and accessories also to the value of $500. All the details are on the homepage of our website. You can go there, enter, just follow the links and all the details, and we'll draw those at the start of November. You can keep up to date with all the news here at The First Serve via our website, thefirstserve.com.au. We're here thanks to Top Agents Real Estate, servicing all of Melbourne, allowing a few more people into inspections, of course, as of today. If you're renting, selling, or having that property investment managed, make contact with David and his team at Top Agents, 9558 4599, or top-agents.com.au. We're off and running here on The First Serve.
GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists, celebrating 25 years of industry experience and exceptional service at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Indeed it is. Every Monday night, Brett Phillips with you. Happy to take your calls 1300 736 736 or on the text 0433 98 11 16. Great news locally for those of us here in Melbourne and Victoria, like country Victoria has been more advanced than metropolitan Melbourne, that tennis is back, and along with golf and a few other outside recreation activities, which will please plenty. As I was coming in tonight, what a beautiful night in Melbourne, and people on the tan track not far from our studios here, and just getting out and smelling some fresh air. It is absolutely magnificent. Gee, a bit going on globally, isn't there? We'll come back to the Australian Open in just a moment. We are going to talk to Peter Johnson in about 10 or 15 minutes' time, who's been the tournament director at St. Petersburg. The ATP, what was a 250, upgraded to a 500 this year. Big event. They put on a magnificent production. I mean, St. Petersburg is a very different sort of city to most Russian cities. And Andrei Rublev, he is having some sort of time in the world of tennis. He's really announced himself. We'll talk about the Sam Querrey story with Jono in about 10 or 15 minutes. That was an unbelievable story developing last week. But for Rublev to win overnight, you know, fourth round of the AO earlier this year, he's made the quarterfinals of the US Open and the French, winning as well as St. Petersburg, Hamburg, Adelaide at the start of the year, and also Doha. He's jumped up into the top 10 with fellow Russian Daniil Medvedev. And I remember the first time I went to the next-gen finals in Milan, he was there with, you know, Alex de Minaur and that crop of young guys, Denis Shapovalov. And Rublev was emerging, but then he fell behind the pack. But, gee, he's overtaken plenty. And the Russians are very charismatic. They're very out there. They can be flashy. They've also got a very hard-nosed, steely sort of manner about them. If we go back to, you know, Yevgeny Kafelnikov and Nikolai Davidenko, Marat Safin, they're an interesting lot. And I saw it up close at the ATP Cup in January this year when I caught Marat. I think he was having a smoke behind the tree and he just popped out of nowhere, Marat. He's just a bit of a peculiar sort of cat. But the Russians can play. They've had a magnificent breeding ground of talent that gets certainly brought up the right way to compete on the ATP Tour. And I just thought his quote was interesting, Rublev, about Rafael Nadal and how important it is to push through those tough days, to find a way to win. He loves Nadal for those qualities. And he said, for me, he is the best athlete, not even in tennis, the best athlete in history. I mean, that's a huge call and very subjective. And if we open up the lines on that, we'd have a million different opinions. But I'd love you just to weigh into that. I don't really want to get into the greatest of all time debate. I want to save that for a little bit later on because I'm seeing it pop up on more forums with Rafa having won these 13th French and, you know, Novak now with a little bit of chasing to do. Can Roger win one more? Who's going to be judged the greatest of all time? I mean, that argument will go on for a while, depending, you know, who leads statistically, but that mightn't be the only factor. But Nadal, it's amazing what he brings. When you watch him train, when you watch him play, the preparation, the behind the scenes in the corridors, and any time I hear Tony Nadal with a microphone near his mouth, he just speaks glowingly of those qualities that you can't always see on the outside of us. He's flashy, but he's also playing the percentages beautifully at the moment and getting the job done, winning big finals that he should be, and defeated Borna Coric. Alexander Zverev, first title in about 17 months for the big German, who got so close, as we know, at the US Open to winning his first major title. Interestingly, he's got David Ferrer, the former Spaniard, I mean, hugely respected on the tour, as just one of the great competitors, roadrunner, would get down and get every single ball, made a French Open final. He's hardly spent any time with Zverev. It's almost like a virtual coaching setup. He's even talking about not coming to Australia. And obviously we know that the players here are going to have to quarantine for 2 weeks before they can actually play any tennis. But Zverev saluting in Germany on the weekend with his win over Felix Auger-Aliassime. Laszlo Jere, the Serbian, up 21 spots to 53 with that win over Cicinato, the Italian, 7-6, 7-5. And a young man who we've been mentioning quite a bit on this show. He's only 17 years of age. We talk about Nadal. Well, this young man has spent a fair bit of time with Rafa, having a hit at the Mallorca Academy. Carlos Alcaraz, who won the Challenger in Alicante in Spain. That's the home of Alex de Minaur, where he's resided for most of his life. He's up 22 spots, 136 in the world. He's just 17. So this kid is coming. I mean, he's jumped from the 600s up now inside the top 200 in the space of, 18 months, roughly. I've seen some highlights. He's got some size. He's got confidence. I mean, you come through that Spanish tennis system, and it's going to certainly prepare you pretty well. As far as the women are concerned, well, they're a little bit starved. Do notice that Marketa Vondrousova, who lost the final to Ash Barty at the French Open last year, tested positive for COVID-19 overnight. So it's something that's going to probably follow every tennis event. And obviously the news out of Wimbledon that we've learned over the last few days is that it's all systems go to bring Wimbledon back for 2021. Just how it looks, a bit like the Australian Open, we don't know fully. Is it going to be full crowds, half capacity, no crowds? But there are certainly plans well into play to make sure it returns in 2021. And the latest on the Australian Open is really, really interesting. I mean, it's a crunch sort of 2 weeks. So the players have all been communicated with. Get here mid-December. We need you here by mid-December. You've got to quarantine. We can't get any exemptions from that. That's what the government says. You have to quarantine for 2 weeks. What they're trying to work out is, can the players create a little bubble in that quarantine to go and have a hit at some practice courts nearby, go to a gym, get some conditioning, just keep themselves active and moving before they get back into competition. And the other issue that still needs to be ticked off is the movement between states with all our borders. How does that then affect the lead-up events to the Australian Open? So that is at a very delicate stage at the moment. Certainly the words coming out of TA is we're positive, and you would expect them to certainly be speaking positively that, yes, the Australian Open's happening, the summer of tennis is happening, it's all systems go, but there's some pretty delicate discussions going on behind the scenes to get all this worked out logistically. And at worst, if we can't play the ATP Cup in the various states, or the Adelaide International or the Brisbane International for the women, there is some talk potentially of playing those lead-up events in Melbourne and sort of scattered within Victoria. But there's a bit at play. That'll all get sorted out certainly in the next couple of weeks. But after the break, we're going to have a chat to Peter Johnson. He's the tournament director. Sam Querrey got the private jet with wife and baby. Do you want to deal with the Russian officials? He said, I'm out of there. No one knows where Sam Querrey is. He's holed up in a neighbouring country somewhere and could face some massive sanctions. Here, thanks to Tennis Direct, tonight Australia's favourite online tennis store. Fast delivery, great prices, free delivery on orders over $150. Tennisdirect.com.au is their website. First serve 10, that's the promo code. You get 10% off. 10% off items already discounted, so go and shop for your life. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists. Celebrating 25 years providing landscape, horticultural and environmental services throughout Australia at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Welcome back right on 7.30. Peter Johnson coming up in just a moment. ATP St. Petersburg Open Tournament Director. Brett Phillips with you tonight, 1-300-736-736. Michael's out on the road. Great to have you on the show, Michael.
How you going, Brett? I was watching the French Open and I watched as much as I could. I thought the semi-final was a great game. And how did you see Tsitsipas and Djokovic semi-final, and how did you see Djokovic in the final? Did the five set take that much out of him, or he just didn't have much zip?
No, I think when you simply play in the Darlong clay, it just even a guy of the standard of Djokovic can be made to look ordinary. I mean, you would not pick it. And even on clay, you would not have thought going to that final it'd be a love and two first two sets. Even though, I mean, that first set went, 45 minutes, so there were some exchanges. It wasn't all totally one way in the rallies. But on the clay, Rafa just finds a way to put that finishing touch on points that he doesn't necessarily always get the advantage on hard courts, which is why Djokovic has sort of dominated Nadal of recent time on hard courts. But of that young brigade, I think, you sort of flip around a little bit, but I think Tsitsipas has got the all-court game that could just elevate him maybe a little higher when the door does open. The door's got to open for these young guys on the tour, which is really, really hard. Ahead of maybe Medvedev and Zverev, I think his ability to come into the net more and just have a few more components to his game in rallies might just give him a little edge there as the young guy that can emerge first. But I could have egg on my face. I mean, who knows what tennis is, going to throw up in the next 12 months. Good on you, Michael. Thank you for calling. In fact, we might give you a round of golf down there at Club Mandalay. So hang on the line and we will get that to you. Peter Johnston, we're going to get to him in some Petersburg because he is the tournament director of that tournament, which has been played overnight, as we mentioned. Rublev winning the final, but a big story was Sam Querrey in the last 7 days. Jono, nice to have you back on the show.
Hey, Brett, good to talk to you.
A week that was far from straightforward. I mean, you've been a tournament director of a number of tournaments over a long period. You've been at the coalface of tennis for a long time. You, like so many administrators, are trying to navigate through COVID, and we know Europe is a very different situation to here in Australia. But just take us through the last week. And I've sort of mentioned Rublev and sung the praises on court. I think the production of the St. Petersburg Open is outstanding, Jono. We got it on ESPN here, and the player intros and the whole theatre in it is absolutely brilliant. But can I just quickly touch on the Sam Querrey story? So he had tested positive, didn't want to do a follow-up sort of medical check, decided to hire a private plane, fled the country. I don't know if we know where he is, but he does seem like he's going to face some ramifications.
Well, Brett, yeah, look, it's a tricky one, actually, just to sort of go much deeper than that, in the sense that it's under investigation by the ATP. But look, as you really pointed out, they're the facts, and you know, we're waiting the ATP to assess it all. Certainly, what it did highlight is just the importance of player compliance with the conditions that are around with COVID. Because, you know, the stakes are so high. It's just like we've seen with the football and with AFL and so forth. You know, a breach of something can sort of bring the whole house down.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
You know, I think the one thing is, you know, if something goes wrong, it can threaten the draw. It can threaten the like in this case the hotel, the arrangement we had with the hotel. It's then also what does the government do, because you know with the whole permissions to go ahead for all these tournaments that are going on at the moment, it's so subject to what governments require. Mm. And things can change. You know, I think the one thing everyone's learned this year is you better be nimble, you better be flexible, and you better have a plan B and a plan C. So
yep.
I guess all of that was sort of wrapped up in that case, but generally for the tournament itself all the way through.
So this is pretty big for Querrey, though. I mean, the ATP's code of conduct suggests that he could maybe be suspended for up to 3 years. We're also talking about maybe a $100,000 fine. So he had arrived in St. Petersburg negative. There was then the positive test, I think, on the Sunday, the day before the tournament actually started. He was then withdrawn, told by yourself, the tournament, to isolate with his family for a period. And obviously then that's when things got a little bit tricky, because the Russian medical authorities came to knock on the door wanting to further examine. And he, well, I imagine maybe got a little bit worried about what could happen, and with a young baby there, and decided to make the call that he did, which may prove to be a silly call. But, you know, how do you know at the time, I mean, what's going through people's minds? But, yeah, it's a difficult one that confronts players.
Well, that's right. And look, it's under the, as I said, Brett, really, because it's being, you know, looked at internally with the ATP, I really don't want to sort of speculate on it any further. But there's a bunch of facts that all need to be sort of, you know, assessed and even found out. So, you know, I think I've got to leave it that way. I just wanted to really highlight, though, that it's, as you said, really, the ramifications are pretty significant for, potentially for the player, and certainly they were for the tournament.
Jono, just generically speaking, you've seen the US Open come back, the French Open, these tournaments now through Europe, Australia trying to decide what January is going to look like, what can and can't happen. You're as experienced tennis administrator as there is in the game. What are your observations? I mean, there's a lot that has had to go into actually getting the tour restarted, and now trying to navigate through COVID, which looks like certainly in America and Europe is going to be sticking around for quite some time.
Yeah, Brett, look, it's one that, you know, I think once you've, like, got a date, which in itself has been difficult this year, you know, say for St. Pete, you know, our date changed, like, twice, and then it got, one of the sell points was, look, we could potentially be a 500 because so many had fallen over, and we got that, and then we were going to be back-to-back with Moscow, but Moscow pulled out, then two more tournaments were put against us. All that highlights is you've got to be flexible and ready, and I think the other thing in all of this, Brett, is, and it's like what Australia has to consider as well, is there's the economics of it all, you know, and you can be flexible to a point, but let's say for the Australian Open, which I'm sure will go ahead, but, and I think it's fairly well stated by Tennis Australia, this could be a costly exercise because depending on what you're permitted to do. And, you know, if you suddenly can't do your crowds, you're losing that revenue. Like, we were 30% spectators in St. Pete, but no corporates.
Yep.
You know, you think of on-site at the Australian Open, what it entails. You think of what if you have to quarantine, which obviously it seems like players are going to have to quarantine here. You know, how does that cover if it's for 14 days? In St. Pete, there was no quarantine. You had to get tested straight away at the hotel. You went straight from airport to hotel for testing. You couldn't go anywhere until you were negative, that type of thing. So I think tournaments are all having to balance this up about whether can we actually do it, and is it viable to do it, as well as can we manage doing it? And look, I think it's just going to be the way now. It's not a thing that just goes away at the end of this year, and 2021's the reset. I think, you know, you're now talking about what happens to tournaments in the first quarter of the year when you see what's happening in Europe at the moment, and the numbers are still high in the US.
Yep.
What happens in Indian Wells? What happens to Miami? These are all, there's so many facets to it, Brett. It's really... it's one that's it's just continuing to mean that you have to adapt all the time.
Watch this space, Jono. I'm hung for time. We'll do it again very soon. We'll see how the query situation resolves itself, mate. Look forward to seeing you back down under.
Thanks, Brett.
Peter Johnson, tournament director, had to deal with a fair bit in St. Petersburg last week. We'll come back. Our last seg on the first serve.
GLG Green Life Group, your market leader in commercial open space maintenance and management. Celebrating 25 years throughout Australia at glgcorp.com. The first serve, your home of tennis.
Ons Jabeur, Shane Leonard, she's part of Ons' team, data analyst based here in Melbourne at Data Driven Sports Analytics and co-host of our weekly podcast, Crunching the Numbers, which you can find at our website, thefirstserve.com.au. Her coach is Issam Jalali, a fellow Tunisian who I caught up with across the weekend.
You know, she's the first top 100, and we don't even have 200 long time back. But with her, it's like she created her way, you know. That's why it was not really easy for her.
Tell us a bit about her game style and how you try to coach her, because she has got a very noticeable points of difference. I mean, the women's game is continuing to evolve. We're seeing lots of different type players now on the women's tour who are using, you know, a lot more variation, and Ash Barty led the way in a lot of ways with all the different things that she brings to the tennis court. And gee, if I look at that match just recently at Roland Garros, I mean, it was chalk and cheese the way she played. Sort of game.
We all know that Ons, she's like a very talented girl. You know, I mean, she can do a lot with the racket. So, I mean, it's not like difficult to coach her, but it's different, you know, because whatever you say or whatever you do, you need to give her some freedom on the court, because it's from there where she gets her strength, you know. So basically what we did, it was more about focusing on her strength, and then definitely everyone have like strength and like weapons and weaknesses, but we try to focus more of what she can do and to hide her, you know, more her weaknesses, or to create zones of her comfort zone and to get out of her uncomfort zone as fast as she can, you know. And the most importantly was to let her do what she can do. And then, but the challenge was, it's when she can use them, you know. It was because she can do many things, and she want to do many things at the same time, you know. So I think that's the point where the most of work what we did.
So from a coaching point of view, Issam, does that make her easy to coach, because she has got different things that she can go to when she's got to make decisions in a rally, and she can throw in the drop shot, she can slice, she can do all these different things? Or is it difficult because you want to maybe sometimes to maybe just stick to the fundamentals and maybe not be so creative? I mean, tell us how you go try to coach and get the best out of it.
It's not about difficult or not difficult. It's about, it's a different, you know, it's like coaching her is different than coaching, you know, coaching a talented player is different than coaching a normal player, you know, because, you know, the talented players, they can do many things, you know. So it's more about decisions on the court. It's more about when she can use her, you know, because they mix a lot. They can do, they can slice, they can play flat, they can play high, you know, they can attack from many corners on the court, you know. It's about when she can use the shots. It's about, it's more about decisions when and how. And especially to make a game plan or a strategy before the matches is very difficult too, you know. You know, whatever you say, it needs to be based on her strength, you know, because if we take the what she can do on the court, you know, they don't feel very comfortable. So the challenge, it's more there.
So in saying all that, what do you feel has been the biggest area that she's improved in to take her now to a higher ranking and to get a bit deeper in the Grand Slams? And as a follow-up from that, what does she need to now do even better to go even higher?
Okay, I mean, the first thing is what we did from the last preseason. It's we focused a lot on the fitness. Okay, her fitness level went, what she can do with the ball, you know. So it's, as I said, we focused on her strength, you know, how she can use it more on the court, you know. It's by creating zones and comfort zones. You know, it was more, so it's like basically we used to think about shots, about more technique, but we changed into zones and angles, how to get the ball in the comfort zone and how to, you know, to focus more on the angles, you know, more about us than what's coming.
Is there one or two particular areas now that you're really maybe focusing on to go further towards sort of the top 20? What's the area, do you think? Is it just that the fitness has got to keep getting a little bit better and all the parts of her game? Or is there one part that you're going, we need to really get this right to go even further?
We are, first of all, we are not in a rush, you know. We had, the good thing is that we are on the right track, in that it's a matter of time, you know. She started the year top 80. Right now, she's number 32. So every step will take, you know, I think right now, a little bit of that match experience, compete, you know, because you are in 30, you know, you are very close to the top 20, top 15, top 10, and then, you know, you have the players behind you, they don't want to let you, you know, they want to always win these matches. We are seeing the good results on the court, you know, we have reason why, or basically the same thing, focus her strength about what she can do good on the court, but the game 70-80% is based on her game, what she can do.
Isam, working with data is something new that you've done with Shane, obviously, who's linked in with our program, The First Serve, and with our Crunching the Numbers podcast. And we love Shane's take on the use of data and how he builds, you know, the relationship, obviously, with the coach. Can you tell us how you've used that and how sort of integral that's been to help you go about your job as a coach?
Yeah, I mean, before I start, I want to thank Sean so much, because, I mean, he made my life easy, you know, with his numbers. You know, I mean, we are not used to work with the data. As soon as I start my collaboration with Sean, I mean, you know, numbers don't lie, you know. So it was like a big add to our plan and program, you know, because, you know, it's like whatever we do, we have something that very important and we were not using before. It was like a big relief to us, and it helped us so much. It helped us so much, like really. It's like basically we have something important that we were missing before, and now we have it, you know. So it will make life much easier when I am planning the session for to make the strategy for the matches and everything.
How do you then relay that message to Ons? Is she quite receptive? Does she like to hear about the numbers and data, or do you try and keep it fairly simple, your message, from the information you're getting from Shane? How do you go about using it?
It's something that me as a coach, I was not used to it. Even her, she was not used to it. So in the beginning, you know, I mean, I need to be very careful how to pass the message. And then if I see any difficulty that about taking the information, I will show the numbers. I don't go straight with the numbers. I tell her, you know, this, 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 and this. And then if there is any doubt with the numbers, it will finish the job.
When you look at the WTA Tour, right now. I mean, we're seeing all these young emerging players win. Świątek, you know, just winning the French, and Sofia Kenin winning the Australian Open. Ash Barty, Andreescu at the US Open last year. It started with, you know, Ostapenko at the French about 3 years ago. All these young players who are sort of playing very fearless tennis, really confident, got, you know, good games they're bringing to the table. And that's why it seems like it's tougher now for Serena to get to 24. And even those like Kerber and Kvitova and others who have been around for a while, it's tougher for them now. What do you observe just about the WTA Tour and the level?
As you said, you know, there is many young girls that are coming up. I mean, the level is very close, out of emotions on the court, you know. So these girls, whoever, they have a big chance to match or to win the tournament. So I think we will see more young girls coming up and winning tournaments. That's what I believe. So it's good. I think it's good for tennis. Definitely it's good for tennis. It will make the draw open so that anyone can win the tournament better than based on two or three players that they always win. I mean, it's like when you go in the tournament, you have the chance like all the other girls. It's not nowadays like the ATP. If Nadal, Djokovic or Federer, they are in the draw, basically the others, they need to forget about it, you know?
It's the hardest question I get asked before any women's tournament. Who's going to win? I mean, God, you throw your hands in the air. There are so many options because of the competitiveness. And just one really quick one I wanted to finish on was just with Ons and her success getting inside the top 100 and what she's doing, what sort of news is that making back in Tunisia? And is that inspiring maybe tennis to be played by more younger people? Tell us a bit about tennis back in your country at the lower levels.
Definitely, she's making like a big on the sports in Tunisia. I mean, of course, she's a big celebrity in Tunisia. Many more players, they started playing tennis because of Ons. Many players, they started playing seriously because of Ons. When she played Australia, you know, she got from the president of the country. Now, last week in Roland Garros, she got a phone call from the prime minister. The number of the players is going high and high. She's playing match on the coffee shops. They are putting a football match, you know, especially even the last French Open. I mean, all the country, they were waiting for the match. It was like the national football team are playing, you know. So, which is very good. And then this, and you know, she's the type of person that this will inspire her. You know, it will make her play better. You know, she don't put a lot of pressure, but it's good when she knows these things.
Issam Jalali, he's the coach of Ons Jabeur. She's got some very, very good components to her game. She's different. She's not the hard hitter who's just bashing the ball. There's lots of variation. The Tunisian version of Ash Barty, you could say. Brett, there are no border restrictions into Victoria. Even now, it's going to be the other states that could be an issue. Bob, absolutely. It's the other states leading up to the Australian Open, whether all these lead-up events can actually take place. Brett, why don't our players and coaches have the nous to befriend Rafa, Roger, Randy? We used to have six or seven in the top 10. Now we bring in Tom Lanovich, Tomic, Yelena. Oh, I live now on that one. But I'll tell you what, our Australian players do get the benefit of us having a Grand Slam. They get to train and spend a bit of time over December, January with those top players to pick their brains. But as I said a few weeks on the go on a training camp with Dominic Thiem. That would be brilliant. Tennis Direct, Australia's favourite online tennis store. Fast delivery, great prices, $150. You'll get a free delivery. TennisDirect.com.au. Catch you next week.
Subscribe to The First Serve via Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform to listen at your convenience to the live shows you miss on a Monday night. Plus our weekly themed podcast content, including Aussies Only, Crunching the Numbers, and In the Huddle, produced by Study and Play USA. Plenty of content to listen to weekly. Subscribe to The First Serve, your home of tennis.